Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, right here on the one and only Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be having several guests tonight. The first is Cheryl Kerr, author of a most interesting book called Got a Fascinating Plot. And then during the second hour, we will have Robert McKnight, nationally known psychic. And while we're getting our first guest on the air, we'll go back for a little more music on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Hello?
Cheryl.
Hi.
Is this Cheryl Kerr?
Yes, it is. How are you?
Pretty good. This is Ken Hudnall.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Well, we are live and want to talk about your book with the interesting title of See Ya.
All right.
Now, the information I've got about you is you're a native of Austin, Texas. And you're still living there. And you're known for not taking no as an answer.
That would be true.
You got a BA from University of Texas at Austin, an MBA from St. Edward's University, also in Austin, and you're a CPA.
Yes.
And a CFE, Certified Fraud Examiner.
Yes.
Well, that sounds like an interesting topic in itself.
That is. People do extremely interesting things and think that you won't ever see them.
Well, I'm sitting here in El Paso in the middle of one of the biggest scandals that's been seen in quite some time. Excuse me. But in the meantime, Let's talk about your book.
Okay.
Why don't you tell us about it?
It is a story written about finding out how the past and the present connect. My father was an Air Force colonel who died very suddenly of a heart attack and left odd bits and pieces. When he died, he had traveled a great deal, and with Fort Bliss in El Paso, I'm sure you're quite familiar with the civilian and military lifestyles and how different they are.
Oh, yes.
I don't think I really knew who my father was as an individual when he died that suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of the kids that the more you tried to be a strong parent, the more I probably became shy and retreated, and I think that increased the gulf in between us. And then in my last 2 years before he died, I suffered severe brain damage and had to learn to walk again and feed myself, and he came to stay with me during the day. He was the only, we had very little kids, and you lose much inhibition when somebody has to help you do almost everything. And that, when he finally died, I think there was such a juxtaposition of the distance of my childhood and then that increased, that last 21 months of our time together made me really realize I did not know who he had been.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote this book as an answer that pieced together a lot of odd and mysterious things, kept the rest of the story, and in doing so, wrote a man, I could say, that fit some of the circumstances and much of my life, and it's gotten awesome comments. We're really excited. It seems to be well received by military personnel and people serving right now, and women and kids and college students, so it seems to have struck a mark with a lot of folks.
Well, very good. Where is the book available?
It's available at chanterpress.com, which is the publisher website. That's chanterpress.com. Also at amazon.com and barnesandnoble.com.
And you said Chantor was your publisher.
Chanter, like the chanter on a bagpipe, the little parts that makes the
squeaky noise.
Chanter Press. Yep, the squeaky noise. The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
No, of course.
Of course.
I'm interested in basically what led to you writing the book. I mean, you know, I'm from a military background, and I'm very familiar with the fact that sometimes you really don't know, well, you really can't know even your closest relatives inside and out. It's impossible. But what led, and, you know, many people have been in that position, but what led you to write a book?
Well, I do write. I have written for a number of years. Writing is probably what I love most to do. It also lets you create. And in this case, his dying so suddenly, when he had become a very big part of my getting well, left a need to create a person, which at times, you know, as they say about history, man writes what he wants to see or connects the dots, and it's all an opinion. It's one person's version is different from another's, and though they've looked at the same events. Writing this book was, it's my second novel. I think it's what I do, but the other part of it was in writing it, it let me write out the circumstances. And my father was very much, there's a character in the book named Matthew Rankin. Matthew very much was my father, very driven to serve his country. Duty came first and family was expected to follow, you know, that lead. That was the world at that time. The other part of the book simply came from fascination with World War II. And the fact that I seem to be somebody that people will tell all sorts of things to. And I began many, many years ago to get people to talk about their, for example, World War II experience that they wouldn't share with a lot of other people. And we had an actual event. We had a German man come to the house one day in May in Austin wearing a trench coat, and he had a German accent. And I guess that kicked off an interest in Germany I had not expected. That's not a historical interest with me, or was not at that time. And I kept wondering, he knew who my father was, and then he drove away. And I spent about a year trying to figure out what little sliver I knew of my father's world, why this German man would come to our, we lived in my parents', or lived in their house at that time, why he would come looking for my father. And I guess in your head you start making up stories to make things fit, to try to figure them out, which man likes to make things, you know, back through time, have an explanation for things. So there came the interest in World War II, as well as the fact that there is an Air Force base. There were 383,000 German soldiers who were POWs in the United States during World War II. There is a camp up near A&M, Texas A&M, that is one of those, and I visited that. And I think the pieces just began to fit. I could not figure out what my father knew about a German soldier. Had nothing at that time to do with World War II. And then later I found out that where he was stationed at Camp Mabry in Austin, they had had a battalion go to the Air Force base on Cape Cod where we had lived, and then gone to Germany. So once I began looking, it was like all these things became coincidence that were real. And I began to weave together a story that put the pieces together. At the same time, I began to talk or to listen a great deal about World War II. And everywhere we went, people would say, I know someone who wants to tell you a story. And I would just sit and listen. And these people that I really didn't know very well would talk. And even 15 years later, I would realize that the stories that they told about their years at war were some of the most vivid and defining of their life. And I probably heard or talked to 200 veterans, a lot from World War II and then Vietnam and Korea, all the way up. And in all cases, you learn that war is an individual event for every person that's in it, but it usually is a very defining moment of their life. And it became something in my head, watching other people serve their country, even though they didn't serve it the way my father saw his duty to his country. And I began to realize how many different opinions there are about sacrifice and service. And when we went to Europe to do some research and went to Eastern France and to Germany, I found people who truly regretted their part as German soldiers. And I found people who would tell you that we served our fatherland, we were right, there was nothing wrong with what we did. And that juxtaposition and the other characters in the book of regret versus lifelong belief in the rightness of what they did brought me to the decision of, I would like to think that I would have been a strong enough person when I knew of the, for example, the concentration camps, that I would have said, no, I will not do that to another person. But then you go and you talk to 100 people who did do that, and you walk away thinking how different people are and what their motivations are.
Mm-hmm.
And that became part of the conflict that's between the characters in the book, is 50 years later, how do you see what you did in the name of a country to other people? And that became the split between, well, you do anything for your country, or you will you eventually stand up and say, no, to me, this is wrong, and put wins out in me. So all the characters kind of grow as you go through the book. Some regret, some do not. But what it is a laying out that everybody is different. They compromise. Some people come back more strongly to themselves. Others never really do anything except say, I was asked to serve, and that is exactly what I did.
Yeah, it was quite the thing for a long time to say, I followed my orders.
Exactly.
Which, of course, is the famous Nuremberg defense that was shot down. But at the time, if you didn't follow your orders, you could be shot.
Yes.
So what did you, well, you know, what could you do? No
mm-hmm.
win situation.
Exactly. But when we went to France several years ago, of course, we're 50 years past the war's end, and I talked people who had lived in villages that had been occupied by the Allies and by the Germans. They did whatever they had to do to survive, including collaborating with, depending on who you considered the enemy at the time. And the people, of course, either ignored it, they collaborated, or they proceeded to try to undermine the Germans as best they could. And we were in Colmar, which was extremely heavily bombed. So we got to talk to people whose families had been there while it was going on. But the most amazing part is that everybody has this belief in what they did. I have watched people truly look backwards and say, wow, I've changed. I'm regretful for my actions. And like I said, other people will look you directly in the eye and say, I served my country. And that's it. So I came away from it knowing that war is a different thing to everybody, no matter if it was World War II or any war since, or even now with the conflicts going on now, you still find a great deal of difference in personal opinion. That's not the same thing as being willing to serve your country, but that difference built a lot of interesting sides, I think, to these characters as they learned to deal with each other in this book.
Well, the... you know, in hindsight, most people think of war as pretty flags flying and, you know, the charging across the battlefield. They don't stop to think about the other side of it, which is you're ordered to do something you don't think is right. Do you do it or do you not?
That would be
true.
For
many people, that's a hard transition to make.
Yes, and I have to admit, growing up as a rather rebellious child in a very strongly military family, that was one thing I felt I could never do, was unequivocally say, yes, sir, no matter what the order was. But I know other people who do believe that. So they are probably far better soldiers than I would have been, because I would have been the one that said, I don't think so, and I would have probably learned things a very hard way. But I've watched people...
Shot it down.
Hopefully not, but I think I watched my father believe past his own thinking. You know, that's how the 60s and 70s were. We were coming out of the Cold War and coming off. We still had a lot of very active veterans at that time. And then, of course, you had the conflicts of Korea and Vietnam, where the country became a lot more politically divided than certainly the veterans who came back from World War II experienced. They came home and resumed their lives and were respected for preserving this country. The other two groups came home to dissension and disrespect and a lot of separateness, which I think makes a difference in how you see yourself. To hear people talk about World War II, I never, in the stories, they would talk, every soldier tells his own story, but I never heard regret for serving in their voices. I heard regret for the things they saw and sometimes the things that they had to do, but they never doubted that they should do it. The others, when they came back, they're such a challenge. You're so psychologically on the edge sometimes when you come back, that to come back and have people of those two different mindsets, I think it began to make people question what they did. So that was a lot of difference. But war itself, that vivid and defining adrenaline rush, whatever you want to call it, of serving, remained some of the most vivid memories of these incredibly long lives. And I thought it was so interesting that so many people 40 and 50 years later still thought back to that war as that culmination of their existence. They came home and married and had careers and had kids, but it never approached the intensity of those few years that they were over there. And they were very generous about talking about each other. So I learned a great deal while I was
there. What I found interesting is when we go out for breakfast on Saturday mornings, there's a group of gentlemen, all retired, but they were retired military, and we sit there and listen to them refight the wars every Saturday morning. What they did was apparently the high point of their lives, and they can't get beyond that.
Yes. That would be true. That would be exactly what I would come across. And I would think, I would be sitting there listening, and it's amazing because some of these people had 50 and 60 years of other experiences, and yet those 2 or 3 or 4 years are what they would go back to
mm-hmm.
every time. And they would tell me in such detail that
they can remember everything.
They could remember everything. And if you talked to another person that knew them, you found that they really were most of the time extremely accurate. They really did recall. And when we went to Europe, we were in London, the Victoria and Albert Museum. They have left the big holes in the outside of the museum that the bombs blew
mm-hmm.
so that people will remember. There's a plaque up and it says, "Remember what almost happened here." And we had our kids with us. And I took them up and I said, "Touch that. This is real. These are not just stories," which they'd been watching me talk to people and hearing the stories. But I wanted them to know they were standing in a place touching a thing that was actual. And then it was, I think, a very real moment for them. It certainly was for me, but I had been before and gotten to see where some of these things had occurred and watch the damage, the writings that have occurred since and the stories about the people that were there when the damage occurred. So it's pretty amazing that even so long ago, I don't think that those values still apply today. And I think that much of what was learned and fought for in World War II still is relevant in life today.
Well, the interesting thing is the folks that we fought so hard against are suddenly our best friends, and some of our former allies are now their enemies, and, it just never stops.
That's true. Conflict is an ever-present thing with people. And war there always seems to be a war somewhere. So
yep.
The lessons in this book about the effect on family and the effect on the civilians and the other people, because war doesn't just touch the soldiers, it touches the people that are where it's happening. It touches the families that are behind. It touches the children who lose a parent and don't really know who they are, which in this book, one of the things you have is a man who's 58 who comes looking for his father, whom he last saw when he was a toddler. And part of the book's resolution is his finding his father. So that came from real events that I did a great deal of reading, came from real events of people that had been living, quote unquote, another life for 50 years. And I thought that it is true. You walk out your front door and we only know what we see of people. I guess my comment, as in when my father died very suddenly, I wasn't sure who I was trying to bury. And as a result, I couldn't bury him basically until I finished this book. The other part of it is the people that live next door to you a whole lot of things in their life that you never suspected were there. And I guess that's what kicked off. The more quirky bits and pieces people told me, the more things I just began to weave together into this particular story, which was the events, the circumstances where the story begins are very real. The cemetery is where he is buried is really in the middle of town. It's just 150-year-old Catholic cemetery, and at the very end of the book, she's there in this cemetery that's in the middle of downtown, and the cemetery is full of sleeping people, and all around it are windows and cars and a Decker highway and people just racing. So you've got that juxtaposition of life and this eternal quiet right there. He's really buried there, so many of the pieces are real. And I just kind of took a story and did a lot of research and wrote events to fit the piece that I could not explain to myself
mm-hmm.
and had a wonderful time doing it. I learned a great deal. I like books like that. I like books that tell me something about who the people are that are the characters.
Well, it sounds like an interesting story. I've seen a number of books where it starts out with something similar to what you're talking about, and then they take a transition off into the wildest science fiction. Of course, I talked to one lady who tried to do a book about her grandfather. who had come, she knew, all she knew is he had come from Europe. Before she got done, she discovered he had changed his name, and there was all kinds of things that popped up. So, you know, a book like that is like riding a roller coaster. And a book like yours is kind of, you know, a nice trip with a lot of interesting things to see.
Well, that's what we're hoping. That's the comment that we've most gotten is that people cannot put it down, which that's been kind of cool because I had my pre-readers, the copies of the book that were here to be looked at before the final edition came out. A lot of the people some of them were contemporary of my father's, and he's been dead now about 13 years. But it became everybody that read it, from 60-something to 70-something-year-old men to college kids, everybody said, I couldn't put it down. Once I got going, I couldn't put it down. So you have incredibly different readerships all liking the book. In the book, there seemed to be a group of characters that catches a whole lot of people's identification. And interestingly enough, we've been asked about doing a second book with the same characters in it, centered around the main character, around Manda, who does the looking to solve the mystery. So I hadn't really thought about that. But in looking around, I'm sure I find her voice easy to keep going. She's a very easy character to identify with. But it's been a little surprising to have the comments coming back from ex-military people, from retired people, about you totally understand how the military works and how did you get the voice set completely. And to know that I got the German soldier right and the history right, it took a lot of research. But it's very cool to know that in writing, they say that you only write, actually only use 10% of what you find. It's kind of interesting to know that I got that 10% in such a good balance for so many readers. So we've been excited about the comments, and the one we get the most is, I couldn't put it down. So anytime you can't put a book down,
that
usually
says something.
It does. It says, especially when you have such a different group of people. I had a lot of men read it, because I'm not a man, and I wanted to know how the book sounded to a man, because it's so centered around the Pentagon and serving in the military, and I was a rebellious, not going to do it that way, daughter of a extremely motivated Army or Air Force colonel. Mm-hmm. My viewpoint is pretty much 100% out from what they thought. So for them to like the book means I got that voice right, means that I was able to get into the character's head and make his world as real to the readers as I felt it was when I was fighting against it when I was growing up. So I enjoy that part, too. That means I got my characters said well, you know, that there was a lot of believability. And it's based on a lot of research and talking, which in putting everything together, most of the events in the book are true. They come from many different lives, but the comments and the places, the emotions felt and the stories that we heard created just about everything in the book. And I think they say, write what you know. And that's what they say.
Sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad.
Well, but to know that you've listened and been told a story, that's what this book is about, is I wrote what I heard, and that was the cool part. That means I really listened attentively to what people told me. And in this case, what I heard was that war is hard on a lot of people. It's hard on families
and
the men that serve and the people that lose someone. They don't know who to bury or where they went. The story about in the book about the brother, Matthew, the colonel in the book's brother, who went to England at 16, ran away from home, and went to join the RAF and fly, and his mother going to put her fingers in the water as some sort of talisman. You know, this water touches the other side, this and the Atlantic Ocean, it touches Europe. Her belief that if she did that every day, it would keep him alive, that's a true story. That's what something I was told. Of course, it didn't work. He didn't come back. But people do... they develop these behaviors these talismans or routines, and they believe in their power. And a lot of people do that. It was kind of fascinating to know there were men who were, while they were serving, carried a bit of glass or a penny or something little in their pocket, always in the same, believing that that was a kind of a charm. So superstition, I guess maybe superstition takes what people need for it to take, you know, that belief that if I do this, because we have such little power over things. When I sat down with somebody and they were talking about being from West Virginia and being 19 and liberating the prison camps, all I could think of was, here is this young man out to serve his country and do what's good. As you said, the blue sky and the flags and the whole bit. 19 years old, from a place that had very few people and very little violence, going, and he became at 19 one of the groups that burst open the gates to the prison camps. He said, I was one of the first people to see what was inside. And I sat there and I heard that story, and I thought about that, but I also thought about what he thought about that. How would it be to be 19 and from a place that was mostly rural and get sent over, and at 19 happened to be part of the battalion that did that? That must have been a life lesson more incredibly real, you know. And even, he's in his 80s now, even now remains a defining moment in his life. But when I sat and I thought about, wow, his life had no way of preparing him for that. He just got assigned, just, here, you're going to go do this. And he said, I saw things I never thought were possible. And what a lot to handle at 19. But he came back and built a life and moved on. And yet if you get him to talk, he has all these details right in hand. So, yes, that, I thought that was, the stories I heard were just, has all these stories, and it's so cool. And I think part of writing this book was, I have this great sense, that so much in that time period in that war needs to not be forgotten. There were some amazing sacrifices.
Well, certainly the reason a war is fought shouldn't be forgotten. I've heard so many shows talking about the World War II generation, you know, the greatest generation, and yet you only know it as, you know, the flags flying and, you know, charging up on Omaha Beach. You don't know what was actually taking place. You don't know the human drama, so to speak.
Exactly, the personal cost. And I think that's what I tried to put into this book, was that in 1996, when the story actually begins and goes back to World War II, that nothing really is a separate event in time. The things we did in 1944 and 1945 had an effect, a ripple effect, in 1996, mm-hmm. and that all things are connected. And these lives, the way the book takes lives from the 1990s and goes back through connection points from 1996 to 1975 to 1944, makes you realize that people lived all across times, not in the same place in time, but in events that sequentially touched each other. And the book comes full circle in the end, with some of the characters knowing each other and solving a mystery that brings peace to both sides. You know, both people are looking for some part of their father. And that again is, I think, a very common thing. My father was gone a great deal. And when he finally came home, I was already almost grown, and it was like, I'm home now, you're going to do it my way. No, I'm not. I've been, you know, you just don't have a parental figure in the same way. So serving, there's such a difference, even in talking to people who grew up as they call them, service brats versus a civilian childhood. They're different worlds from each other. You talk to people, they're both an American experience, but they're wholly culturally different to what people expect and what they're used to. And we were civilian for years. And then when we finally began to move Air Force bases and my father went on active duty, I didn't know how to move every year or 2 years. I didn't know how to packed, and I didn't know how to take it when my father got assignments and was gone for months on end. Other people were like, okay, he's gone. He'll be back in 9 months. I didn't know how to do that. He had always been gone a lot, but I'd always been in one place with a network of friends and family and a known existence. Well, these people, that didn't matter. And all I did was become more and more shy, whereas children who grew up in that environment, it doesn't occur to them to be scary to be new. They're just there. That's only my experience. Other people were not affected the same way. I got even more shy and quiet because I didn't know how to enter a room and immediately sit in. I thought you had to be there for a while. So but when I talk to other people who grew up, I find the same distance. They don't always know. A lot of childhoods were very fractured. And in the service, there's a great deal of alcoholism and a great deal of loneliness. There are a lot of issues for the families. And at one point in time, when my father was a base commander, I guess at that time, he never spoke directly, but he ended up having to handle the effects of people's personal issues and struggles, you know, within the troops. And I think there's a lot of a people side that serving your country, it affects a lot of folks other than the soldiers. But even the soldiers, they're human. You know, they're not just somebody that gets up and does their job for the flag every day. They're people that come home every night. And life is not easy. And I would tell you that whether it's in the service or civilian life, life is messy. Families are messy. There's always conflict.
It's definitely something you don't survive.
That's right. But there's a great deal of struggle all the time. And I think when you move a lot, I know I did not know what to do. I was totally different than some of those other kids. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in either direction. It's just I felt like I was standing across the big wide chasm from everybody. You know, I felt so different. But this book has bits and pieces in it. I seem to have caught the snapshot of all these different levels of struggle or angst well. And that's been the cool part, is to have so many different reader groups say, oh, I really like that. Well,
it's always fascinating to see how people react to a book. I wrote, I was challenged to write a supernatural romance, which is not what I do. And, you know, I didn't push it that much. And I went to do a book signing at an Air Force base. And I'm sitting there at my table, and a bunch of little old ladies with blue hair and tennis shoes come in. I mean, just a mob. And they're each carrying a copy of the book. And I didn't know it sold that many copies. And it was the closest thing to erotica I'd ever written. And they all looked like my grandmother, every one of them. And they surrounded my table, and one of them said, we want to talk about this book. So I was waiting to get lynched. And they said, when's the sequel coming out?
And you were,
so
you were on your
one
way.
So I actually got a totally different one.
It made you totally remember your grandmother in a different way, too.
Oh, tell me about it.
What kind of makes you wonder?
Yeah, I may have, you know, misjudged her. But to get that type of reaction, totally unexpected. And I've found that with a number of books that I've written. Sometimes people don't react as we think they're going to, and the same is true in regard to the military. People look at it as a different world, and it's not.
It isn't, but I think when you are not the person serving, you are more a bystander or an observer, and it's not got the same sense of belonging. If you are there, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the military is a world unto itself many times.
Oh, I agree. It has its own rules. I considered the rules, no matter what, growing up, it was a man's world. Even the women that existed at that time, it was a man's world. You didn't have any emotion. You toughed it out. You dealt with your own. And that's the way my childhood was. You didn't, my brother and I tell people we were considered to be a plebe. And the same rules that applied for soldiers applied for us. You know, stand up straight. Don't cry.
Yeah, in many cases, that's the way it was.
In many cases,
but
that's the way it was.
But not in every case.
No. But in our case, you know, the persona that was the colonel was the persona who was the father. And so
yeah.
I'm sure there are other fathers who were not that way, but our was. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just meant there was never ease. There was never, now later, when my kids were born, my father became very much an affectionate grandfather. It was kind of funny because my one comment that was made when he died was, the man who died is not the man that I served with. So he had made the jump to appreciating a different world, which was children. But growing up, my children, growing up, the world was serve your country first and the family comes along. And I don't know that it was bad. I just know that that's the way it was, and maybe nobody knew how to be different. But
well,
looking back,
like when I was commissioned, I had a crusty old first sergeant said if the Army wanted you to have a wife, they would have issued you one. And that was the attitude of a lot of people.
And that's probably true. There is a lot of, when I look back, probably a lot of rules that made sense at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a teenager in a man's world after having been a civilian child with relative freedom, because Austin at best was never very conservative, to move from that world to a military world created many of the conflicts that are within Manda's history in the book are real. They're either mine or some other child who had the same experience, trying to transition between the civilian and the military world. By the end of it, I was fine. But the growing pains for about 2 years are truly, of course, childhood is never, you never really know with kids until later how deeply or not something has affected them. And it's later when they start to talk to you about memories and you think, well, I thought that was sort of incidental, but that child remembers it this totally, completely different way. And you think, wow, it was a big deal for them and I didn't realize it. It makes you stop and realize that those little people are also observers. And the service...
And they know more than you think they know.
Yeah, they do, a lot of the time. But the children in the service, they grow up, a lot of times, I'm still in touch with some of the people, they either grow up and they want to serve, or they grow up and they want absolutely nothing to do with the military, but there aren't very many people that are, quote, on the fence. They're either able to handle the sense of duty, or they grow up saying, oh, wow, that was too much for me. I have too many rules. But, you know, I regard... I think kids need rules. That's just a personal opinion. I think the rebellion that comes from that is not always necessarily a thing, because some of those kids that I knew who grew up turned out to have a lot more problems. And I think that's because there's such a total dislike for rules that you lose reason in that, and you forget that rules were sort of people behave, because to not behave creates a lot of dysfunction. So. But, you know, people are that way. You become what you want to become. And at some point in time, whether you had a hard time growing up or not, you have to put that down and say, whatever my childhood was, good or bad, I'm going to be a functional adult. Or you become an alcoholic, or, you know, have marriages or whatever. But people choose to be who they are as adults in the end.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. And the problem is when they... seeing beyond the facade as to who they or what they really are can be quite a long drawn out process.
I think so. And in this book, I think that happens for the two men, the two characters, the main characters in the serving, Matthew and then Jan, who are the older men in the book. It becomes a, Matthew figures out who he is and who he wasn't at the expense of serving his country. Jan, the German officer, does the same thing, but in reverse. He has incredible regrets for things he did as a young man. Matthew regrets what he has become. He's become the Pentagon's man to do anything because that's what they wanted, and he finally realizes at the personal cost what that was, the effect it was having on his family. Peter, the younger German man in the book, is, he's not even there. He's 58, and he's still trying to figure out who he was. He was very tied to, I was very interested when we went to Europe, and you simply do things because that's the way it's always been done, and this is where our family has always lived. People are, in some of the people I met were much more tied to family because it was a duty than to ever being themselves. So when Peter comes looking to America, comes looking for his father, he doesn't really know why he's there yet. Hello?
Yeah. I'm trying to juggle 50 things here.
Oh, okay. But Peter, yeah, he's growing in a different, he's 58 years old, and he's finally figuring out who he is. So everybody grows at a different pace in this book, in a different way.
And the interesting thing is, it's in many cases, it's happening and you're not aware it's happening.
Yes.
At least that was my impression.
Well, a friend of mine that's a retired Army colonel said, you think it is a coincidence in the book, and then you realize that it is not. Because it's very true. The vehicle for Manda learning who her father was is the effect of helping Peter find his father. And because of that, there's no, it's not really a coincidence. It's a parallel looking.
Mm-hmm.
But she's there on purpose. And she's helping him on purpose. She's helping him because she knows that she's looking for a resolution she didn't have. And one thing that's true about when people die, and this is in the book, people the way we remember them are not always people the way they really existed. And my perception after my father died was very much that. I was almost like he became the cardboard cutout, and I thought, oh, that's my father. And then I realized I didn't know who the well-rounded person was. And people would tell me a story or give me an analogy or dredge up a memory, and I would think, well, that's different. I would never have expected that of him. And the more they told me, the more I realized who I didn't know. And that was hard because you can't say goodbye if you don't know who you're trying to bury. So.
No, that's true as well.
Yeah,
I remember when my grandfather died. I mean, you know, I knew him and thought I knew, you know, most things about him. And after he died, I heard stories that if you'd have told them to me when he was alive, I never would have believed them.
And that's because people aren't the same way in their role as a parent as they are as a contemporary of other people. And in that role of a parent, you think you know who someone is. And that's all I could think was, wow, to all these other people whom I had known, I really didn't know who the man was. And even in that last extremely intense 21 months, we were focused on getting me well. But I still didn't, I learned a great deal about him, but I didn't know what made him tick. And I guess that's when he died so suddenly. Then all anybody is you can't, all they are is a memory. And memories can't explain things or talk or breathe. And then you're just left with this celluloid, one-dimensional memory, but you can't get any further with it. And
that's,
I think,
true.
That's what writing the book was really about, was who am I trying to bury? who am I trying to move past? Of course, my kids at that time were old enough to ask questions, and when you start to try to answer a child's questions, you have to get down to the truth, because children ask very good questions. They also don't take answers that aren't real, because they'll just say, well, what about this? And it makes you stop and think, as a parent, as their mother, but also as his daughter, it made me want to put all those things together and try to give them one answer that made sense. He was a complex person, but he was not known to me. You know, a lot of the things I learned later were maybe not always that interesting, but they were interesting because they were new and I was searching. By that time, I was looking, and anything I found out told me a little bit more about the man who died.
We've got a caller.
And I think that's what I needed to know. Okay.
We got a caller. Let's see what kind of questions they have.
Oop, all right.
I just lost that caller.
Oh.
That's too bad. The caller, if whoever that was wants to call back, we will get you on the line with Cheryl Kerr, and hopefully it wasn't the system that dropped them. This is quite a sophisticated system, and sometimes, since I'm running both the board and doing the show, I can't get right to somebody when they call. Well, the stories you hear, the reminiscences of friends and relatives about someone who has passed away, can give you an unbelievable a view of whoever the individual is that you never would have had before.
I think that's very true. There are so many things I wish I could ask now. But even now, sometimes it's the chance comments that catch me, because I add them to somebody else's bit of a story, and the two people may not know each other all that well. But put to me, I'm trying to stitch together a real person out of everybody's bits and pieces of a memory. And memories are, of course, static. They're not going to change. They're
That's
just
true.
There. But I think the suddenness, when you're not allowed to wrap up, or the closure, as a psychologist would call it, it just leaves you sort of floundering until you find your own way through it. And I think this book was my answer to that. You asked me why I wrote it. I think I wrote it because I needed to tell myself something about my father and about me. I think as you said, don't take no for an answer. I go looking for the answers, and I'm not afraid to find them if they're tough. But that I probably get from my father, that tendency to, until it makes sense to me, I don't consider it done.
Mm-hmm.
And but in losing somebody, you don't get to say, oh, well, I didn't do that right, let's have a second go. You're
there
finished.
Are no redos.
There are no redos. And especially when you have children who are old enough, they were 7 and 5, old enough to ask and young enough to cry and let you see their heartbreak, you are trying especially to not give them too much information, but to give them real information. That's a very, both those years are very observant times, and children that young don't tend to be afraid to ask you the hard questions. And
that's
so
true, because they don't realize they are hard questions.
Right. They just want to know, well, where exactly is heaven? How does it work?
That's right.
And you're like, I don't know. And then you realize that not only do you not know, standing next to a person, we did the CPR when he died. At what point in time, I have a line in the book, at what point in time does the soul separate from the body? You're breathing and you're unconscious, but you're still there. And in the next moment, you look down and you realize that whatever soul was there is gone. And now it's just a body. I actually did that. That was me that watched that go. And you wonder between one heartbeat and the next, when does the soul go away? When is that not what loss of connection is there to when the person is no longer with you? And I remember standing there, and I actually did look. There's a scene in the book about the emergency room. I actually did stand there. I had to wait for somebody to come and pronounce him dead. Mm-hmm. And I was there. And I remember looking at that clock thinking, if I can make it one more second without screaming. And I remember that clock ticking, one big second hand movement after the next. And that's the way I got through about an hour, was one second to the next. And I know if that was tough, all these things I write about in the book, surely people that are at war or at home waiting or growing up, time is a very long thing at moments for people. It's very hard for people to, I will get through this, but, you know, then you have to get through that. You have to turn it on to the next day or the next week. And after about 2 weeks after the funeral, everybody had given you the ham and been your friend and been to the house. All
right,
of a sudden,
come
everybody
to the house
said, oh.
And, yeah.
Right. But
well,
then all
we've
of a
gone
sudden,
through an hour, and it feels like we've been talking just a few minutes.
Well, I have enjoyed it.
It's a very enjoyable conversation. And I want you to tell the listeners where they can get your book.
Okay. Chanter Press, ChanterPress.com is the publisher, or Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com online. And I know Amazon sold out. Go ahead.
Say again?
Oh, so I was going to say, we know Amazon was sold out a few days ago, which tells us that demand has been really good, so we're excited about that.
Oh, very good.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
That's always excellent when Amazon sells out.
I
tell you, when your next book comes out, let me know and we'll get you back on. I do appreciate you being with me, though.
Okay, thank you so much, Ken. Have a good evening.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Well, that was Cheryl Kerr, author of See Ya. We're going to go to a little break, and when we come back, I'll have Robert McKnight, nationally known psychic. And if you want to call in, he'll do readings for you. Back right after these messages.
Ken, it's me.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, okay.
When you called in, my screening system grabbed the call and put it into a chat room for me to find out who it was.
Okay.
So.
But, are we on the air now?
We are on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, good evening, everyone. And if you want a reading, call in. I guess Ken gave you the number, and we'll be happy to accommodate you.
If you want to find out what the future holds, you can call 347-857-2680, or you can call 866 929-2155. Robert McKnight is nationally known as a psychic, and if you want to know what the future holds, this is a man to tell you. So,
let me give the listening audience a little background on who I am. That way, you can have an idea of who you're speaking with. I've been doing metaphysical work actually since I was about 12 years old, and if you want to know the exact numbers, that puts it at about almost 50 years. So I've done a lot of readings throughout the years. The number of readings, who knows? But the most important thing, prediction that I made in my lifetime was obviously the incident, of course, with 9/11. I predicted that 5 days before it happened, and I was on the radio station here locally in El Paso. I went to the radio station on Thursday, the day before 9/11, and I wanted to make the announcement, but the powers that be at the radio station didn't allow me to do it. And I kind of vacillated about going to the authorities, and I said, they might just think you're a kook or whatever. But I regret it now because, you know, after what happened, I had a lot of personal issues dealing with that for not going to the authorities. And I even picked up the name of the guy that flew the first plane into the World Trade Center, so that would have been a dead giveaway for anybody going through airport security with that name, Atta.
Yes, it would.
I eventually met up with the head of the FBI office there in New York, and we sat down and chatted for about 20 minutes, 30 minutes about the incident. And, well, everything else is history. I guess maybe destiny was meant to happen. But that was probably one of the major predictions that I made. Throughout the years, there's been a lot of international things that I've predicted, assassination attempts on key leaders worldwide. And I live here on the border right now. I'm a sister city of Juarez, Mexico. And we all know what's going on over there. And about two or three years ago, I predicted that there was going to be a major revolution occurring in Mexico, probably the year 2010. And a lot of the indicators are already there. So we'll see how that plays out. But I'd be happy to entertain anyone with your questions. What I require is the name of the person. I require a birth date. And also, I would like for the person to select a number between 1 and 100. That gives me a little baseline data using numerology. And also, if you could have maybe something to write with, that way you can take some notes as to some of what my predictions are and see if they're occurring in the past, present, or if not, we can accommodate you for the future. So let's get rocking and rolling. I'm ready to get started.
Okey-dokey. If you've never had a reading by Robert McKnight before, he will absolutely blow your mind with his accuracy. And the number to call is 347-857-2680 or the toll-free number 866-229-2155. While we're waiting for the callers, a couple of questions. Now, when you do a reading for somebody,
right?
Do you just get impressions? Do you get images? What do you get that allows you to make the accurate predictions that you do?
Well, actually, there's a combination of several factors. Number one, I do listen to a person's voice. A person's voice does give me a lot of information, actually. Birth dates also kind of zeroes in on the information. And then the variable is the number that one selects between 1 and 100. That gives me additional information as to what's going on perhaps in the person's subconscious or in the person's psyche, because it's a number that they selected. It's a number that might mean something to them as an individual, or something, some type of a connector in the past. I also get a lot of images, visualizations. That occurs quite often. And just as a current example, just something that happened yesterday, about 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, I was not at home, and I called my daughter up basically to find out how the dog was, because I felt that something had happened to my dog, who I adore. And, she checked on the dog, and the dog was okay, no problem. Well, okay, that was just maybe a false alarm. However, this morning, I did notice that my dog didn't want to eat, and I observed him for a few minutes, and he started vomiting. And so apparently he had some type of, a stomach infection or something like that. But that was an example of the visualizations that I get here even locally with me. So my dog's okay now. We took care of him, and he seems to be okay now. But there was a little incident like that, and that just occurred yesterday. So there's little things like that, but they're significant in my life.
So basically, you put it down just kind of a feeling.
A feeling.
Well,
actually, with my dog, I did get a visualization that he wasn't okay. I did see it. And, but like I say, he's okay now, but he did have a problem. I guess he must have eaten something that didn't agree with him, but he looks to be back to normal. So these are just some of the examples that that happened. With 9/11, the way it happened was actually it was twofold. I was talking to a friend of mine on Wednesday evening, and he sort of was a stimulus for a couple of things. And then when I went to sleep on Wednesday, the Wednesday before 9/11, that's when I saw it all folding out: the planes hitting the towers. The smoke, all that smoke, it was rushing through the streets of New York. That's what terrified me. But I did see that clearly, and I got to the radio station about 6:15 in the morning. Our show wasn't until 8, and everybody was asking me, "What the heck are you doing here so early?" And I said, "Well, look, this is what's going to happen, and it's probably going to happen in the next 7 days, 5 to 7 days, and." There was a couple of people there in the radio station that wanted me to go ahead and make the prediction, but the program director didn't allow me to do it because she said it was too heavy a thing. But I kind of regret not shouting out or saying something.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest is
even so, it might not have changed anything.
Probably would not have changed. I think, like I say, this was just probably destiny. There is one curious coincidence, very 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 interesting coincidence that is connected with the terrorist attack. I'm a retired Navy officer, and in 1991 I was in Hawaii, and I was in charge of the Arizona Memorial during the 50th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was a sneak attack, which happened, 50 years earlier. And then I'm connected with this other attack that happened on September the 9th. So I kind of find that somewhat morbid. But nonetheless, it did happen, and I was there with President Bush, and Dick Cheney was there, and Senators McCain, Phil Graham was there, and a few other dignitaries that were there. So I kind of find that, like I say, somewhat bizarre in nature. But these are coincidences that have occurred with me throughout my whole life, and I've come to accept them as just who I am. It's just who I am.
It's just part of being you.
It's part of who I am. It's part of my mental DNA, and I've accepted it. I can't change it. I can't turn it off. And it's something that happens with me on a daily basis. I've been doing Ken's show for about 3 years, I believe, something like
that.
Yeah,
we're on our third year now.
We're in our third year, and I think we've been very, very successful. We've had a lot of good readings throughout the years. A couple of individuals that have called. I remember one girl in particular. As soon as I started talking to her, I saw lung cancer with her, or throat cancer, and,
mm-hmm.
and that girl did quit smoking. A couple of other people, we talked about having breast cancer, and they went and checked it out, and guess
and
what?
They had it.
They had it. They got treatment, and they're good to go. There's just been so many incidents. I can't, you know, I don't have a log or anything like that. These are just things that are popping up off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, it's always interesting when people call for readings and do their best to prove you wrong, and they always wind up having to admit that what you're saying is true.
Well, we do. We do have a lot of skeptics out there, and I don't mind. I don't mind people being skeptical. You know, I've made a couple of perhaps, you know, outlandish claims right now, but everything is documented. You know, if you go to my website, robertmcknight.com, you can take a look at some of the testimonials, take a look at some of the media write-ups that I've gotten throughout the years. You know, you can focus on the El Paso Times. I believe it was the 9th of August. Oh, I don't remember the year, 2005 or 2006, something like that, where they did a feature article about my 9/11 prediction.
Mm-hmm.
And also there was a murder here in El Paso that received national attention, a brutal murder. This savage kidnapped a little girl from a Walmart, and unfortunately he murdered the little girl, and the family came to me wanting to know what had happened, and actually I gave them the name of the individual that had killed her. I gave the family the first name and the last name. It didn't mean anything to them. But about 2 or 3 months later, the police arrested an individual with that name, and subsequently he was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to lethal injection. So that that made the news also, and we got a little publicity on that. And other things, resignations, I think it was, I don't know if it was Gorbachev or Brezhnev, back in the late 90s, I remember it was December 17th that I predicted that that person was not going to be in office by the first of the year. And on the 31st of December, the person resigned from office, and that kind of shook up the Kremlin and, you know, the Soviet Union. Things like that that are documented. So it's been a fascinating run.
Yes, it has. And, you know, I remember some of the things that have happened over the years. You had the gentleman who you told him he was going to be selling some property by the end of the year, and he kept insisting he had no property he was going to sell. And you asked him what he did for a living, and he was a real estate agent.
That's right. I do remember that, yeah. Yeah, and he was in real estate. And I guess sometimes people get nervous talking on the radio when people come for individuals' readings, you know, I know that they're very nervous. They don't know what we're going to be discussing face to face. And I mean, I do take that into consideration, and that's why oftentimes I kind of have to, you know, drag things out of individuals by maybe making some connections, peripheral connections with them, or you know, asking them directly questions like this gentleman. Well, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm in real estate. Well, there you go. You're going to be selling some property and making some money by the end of the year. But he didn't make the connection.
But he was thinking about something else.
Yeah. Well, even today, I had a young lady that was here and asked if the name Thomas meant anything to her, the name Tom. And she swore up and down, it doesn't mean a thing, nothing, absolutely zero. So we continued the reading, and well into the reading, 30 minutes later, 45 minutes later, I asked her where she worked, and she worked at a school called Thomas Manor. Well, how about that? Well, there's the name Thomas. And then I asked her what her mother does, and her mother is in the medical field, and she works at the local hospital here called Thomason. So,
yep.
You know, she got a little bit nervous, excited, and then she says, oh, how could I overlook something like that? You know, that was so obvious. But those are, you know, people get nervous, and sometimes they overlook the obvious. So I have to be a little bit patient with him, speaking with him, and, you know, not get upset or anything and try and drag out the information. I remember that one time we were speaking to a gentleman about his career, and it was a long way getting to what he does, but it eventually came, I picked up something dealing with windmills. I picked up something dealing with windmills. I picked up Copenhagen or Denmark or something dealing with windmills. And then it so happens that this guy is into what wind energy. He was putting up some of those windmills to produce electricity. So sometimes it takes me a little probing to get to the bottom line, but eventually we'll get there.
And some of the connections that have come up with folks have been absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, we've got plenty of illustrations. I don't know if you have anything at the top of your head, Ken, or anything like that that you might want to throw out, or you know that you can recall, or anything specific.
Well, there was the one of the things that's become evident over the years is people don't always ask the question they really want an answer to.
Absolutely.
And
you're absolutely correct.
There was one young lady I remember who actually called the show. And I don't remember how we got around to the topic, but basically you told her that her husband was seeing somebody else, told her who he was seeing. And she said, oh, that couldn't happen. And she called back a day or two later and said she caught him.
Wow. Well, actually, that type of scenario happens quite often. I guess about 2 weeks ago, I had a lady here who came back for a follow-up reading. And a year ago, I had told her the same thing, that her husband was cheating on her. And I gave her the girl's name. And so she became her own private detective, following the guy around, and she eventually busted him. And it was with that girl, with the name of the girl that I had given her. And eventually she wound up divorced, but she was really brokenhearted. I mean, she was very, very much in love with this person. I'm not going to say gentleman, that's what I was going to say, but with this individual. But you could see the... agony in her face. You could see it was literally destroyed. But I gave her some consolation that I did tell her that he would come back, on his knees with mea culpas, and it would be up to her whether she found it in her heart to forgive the guy or just turn her back on him and continue her own journey. But, yeah, that happens. Unfortunately, that happens too often. And I think that's been one of the major issues dealing with me on an emotional level, because I see the pain that infidelity causes, that betrayal causes, and the heartache and the destruction of the family unit. And it is agonizing to see these individuals at a low point in their life and with a pain in their heart. You know, I wish I could wave a magic wand and just have that pain disappear. But
make it all better.
Yeah, make it all better, but unfortunately it's a matter of time. Time does heal all wounds. Some individuals get over it quicker than others. But eventually, we wake up one morning and we smell the coffee and look out the window, and it's a bright, beautiful day. The birds are singing. The sun is shining bright. And people recall the moment, but then there's no pain in their heart. And I think that that's what is important, that there is no longer any pain or any suffering. And I'm glad that I can sometimes play a part in that equation, because that's what it's all about. It's all about to eliminate pain or suffering, or perhaps maybe even to avoid it in the first place. I speak to a lot of individuals. I get the males here, females, and I tell them, look, you're going down this road, and if you don't change, this is what's going to happen. These are the consequences. It's up to you. You make your choices. I cannot make the choices for you. I cannot make any decisions for you. Whatever you do is based on your own conscience, it's based on your own ego or your own selfish needs or whatever. But these are the people that are going to pay the price. And if you want to put them in that ledger, then it's your responsibility as to what happens.
Well, it seems folks are a little reticent about calling tonight. I even have a toll-free number set up for them, 866-229-2155. Or if you want to call the other line, it's 347-857-2680, and you can find out what the future holds. You know, normally for a reading from Robert McKnight, you would pay a good price, but here you can find out for free what the future holds. What's interesting is when I went off my broadcast show, right before that, you said that I would be heard around the world by August.
Well, I guess I was off by a week, wasn't I?
Yeah, that's true. And this show is heard around the world now.
Wow, that's awesome. That is so awesome. Well, I'm sure, you know, with time, word gets out. I don't have to do any advertising. Word of mouth is all I need. Right now, of course, with the internet and the technology, I get correspondence from all over the world. I get a lot of phone calls actually from India. Which really surprised me. Actually, it's skewed. It's skewed towards India. I get a lot of calls from females, especially from India, professional ladies that have gone on to complete their degrees or studies. They're working as doctors, lawyers, accountants, professional individuals. And there seems to be a common denominator here, because apparently, the wages over there aren't anywhere comparable to ours. And their basic question seems to be, are they going to be able to, I guess, immigrate into the United States or another foreign country so that they can, reap the rewards of their labor? And that seems to be one of the major concerns with these individuals. I had a call from a person from Israel recently, and it's quite interesting. This gentleman, this was all by word of mouth. He knew somebody who knew somebody who whatever, and he just called me on a whim, just to see what was going on with him. And I predicted that this individual here was a person who was a key player in economics. A person who was exceptionally wealthy, and I'm not talking about a millionaire, I'm talking about a billionaire. Apparently he was in the process of negotiating the sale of a big company. And
looks like we have a caller, Robert. Let's bring him on and
good.
See what their question is.
Sure.
You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. So far.
And what's your first name?
Karen.
Karen.
Yes.
Well, what do you think about the show?
Oh, I like it. I just turned it on a little while ago.
Well, we started broadcasting on Monday, and we're going to be here Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 Mountain Time.
Wow.
And I think Robert's going to be with me every Thursday evening.
That's correct.
So would you like a reading?
Yes.
All right. Well, good evening. Good evening, Karen.
Good evening.
My name is Robert. And first of all, let me ask you, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Illinois.
Illinois. Okay, good. Karen, could you give me your birthday, please, dear?
4/14/51.
4/14/51. And would you please give me a number between 1 and 100? Select a number between 1 and 100.
65.
All right, 65. All right. Well, let me tell you what's on the table with you right now, okay? Now, when I say right now, I'm probably going to open up a window of about maybe 3 to 5 years, either in the past or in the immediate future. I'm not going to go back more than 2 to 3 years in the past, and I'm not going to go past 2 to 3 years in the future, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let me tell you what's on the table. The very first thing, apparently there appears to be some type of a situation occurring with you dealing with some type of property.
Yep.
You didn't let me finish. That's all right, though.
Go on, finish.
You're going to be in transition with property. You're going to be selling some property, buying some property, negotiating for some type of property. Now, this could be perhaps maybe acreage, parcels of land, a home, a condominium, or whatever. But it's going to entail something dealing with either selling or purchasing property or possibly both. Okay, does that mean anything to you, Karen?
Yes, it does. I'm selling 2 pieces of property right now. I have it in the realtors.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a third one. As soon as I get the people that are in it, the bad people that are in it, out of it.
Okay.
And I'd like to stay where I'm at because I'm right across from my son, but if I should meet somebody, I would...
Okay.
I would
all right,
be with
let me tell you about that, too. And for all the callers, I don't want you to be too generous with your information. I mean, you know,
okay.
You are selling property, but then don't add anything else because you're going to probably take the wind out of my sail, okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, let me tell you what else is on the table with you. Now, we have that issue dealing with property. You're going to sell it, again, probably within the next 12 to 24 months. All right, so that will be liquidated. All right, so that will be in your favor. Now, there is going to be an individual dealing with your personal life, your love life, your emotional life. There is going to be a person. Now, this can be, again, past, present, or future. Let's find out if this has already occurred. But there will be a person whose name begins with the letter J. Very, very strong letter for you. Now, this could be a John, a Joseph, a Jack, a Jerry, or something with the letter J, unless that already means something to you.
No, it doesn't.
All right, that's not like your father's name or a child's name.
Oh,
or whatever.
I have my dad's name, nickname was Juggy. His actual name was Gerald. My brother's name was Jerry, and his name was Gerald.
Okay.
They passed on.
Okay. All right. But that was with the J. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's you see, the J is significant in your life, either a mate or possibly somebody in your immediate family, like a father, a brother, or a child. Okay?
Pardon? Right, what was that? What did you say?
Okay. The letter J would be significant with you, like maybe a parent's name or a sibling. Or a child, but it's going to be someone who's very, very connected with you, okay?
Are they living? Are they here on earth or are they in heaven?
Well, maybe your dad's not with us.
Right, my dad isn't with us.
Your dad is what?
My dad has passed over.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But let me give you another name that will be significant with you. I'm going to give you actually two names, and I'm going to be very specific about the names, okay?
Uh-huh.
there is going to be a person whose name begins with the letter D. It could be either a David or a Danny or a Don or a Daryl or something like that, if that doesn't already mean something to you.
Well, I know some friends I just met, but that's it.
Well, now you just met a person with the name of what?
David.
Well, that's what
and
I'm
then,
saying.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm saying. Now, has this individual contacted you or wanted to go out with you or anything?
No.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. The person whose name begins with letter D, possibly a David, will be contacting you, maybe take you out to lunch or dinner or have some type of conversation with you, but that letter is very strong with you, or that name is very strong.
Mm.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, there is one other issue with you that you need to be very, very concerned about. You need to be very careful about a major problem with your back, if that doesn't already exist. Maybe some issues dealing with pain, scoliosis, or possibly an injury, but it may also include your neck, if that hasn't already happened.
No. I went to the hospital the other night, but it wasn't for that.
Okay, what was it for?
My bladder, my gallbladder.
Okay,
they think I have a stone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, well, actually, because I see you in some kind of pain. Now, that hasn't affected your back or anything like that, has it?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. What about in the past? Did you have any injuries or any problems with your back?
Yes, I did, but that was years and years ago.
Well, okay. Remember, we're talking past, present, or future, okay?
Uh-huh.
Did you have an operation or was it just back pain?
Just back pain, and I went to a chiropractor and had it dealt with.
All right. Well, you may have some issues somewhere down the line dealing also with your back. But it's nothing that's not repairable. It's nothing that can't be taken care of. Because actually, your lifeline, you're probably going to be around a long time, Karen.
Oh, good.
Now,
I've always been worried about that.
Let's focus in on your maternal grandmother, your mom's mom. Okay?
Okay.
She's already passed away, correct?
Yes.
How old was she when she left us?
I think she was around 47.
Okay, she was 47. What about your mom?
My mom was 84.
All right. Wherever your mother went, as far as age goes, that's probably where you're going to go. Actually, what I put down with you was 87.
Wow.
So you got a lot of productive years ahead of you, girl, about another good 30 years.
Wow. I'll be able to see my grandchildren.
You'll be able to do a lot more than that. Finances with you will not be an issue either. But anyway, we'll let you go now because I'm sure we have some other callers. And if you ever want to look us up, you can go to my website, robertmcknight.com. Take a look and see what's there. And take a look at some of the testimonials and take a look at some of the media reports also.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Well, good luck to you, Karen. Yes.
Thank
you. Appreciate you,
God calling. Bless you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Well, it's interesting. First caller out of Illinois.
Yeah, I think we did good.
Yep. And the interesting thing about this method of doing a radio show, we're heard literally worldwide.
That's awesome.
And that's why I went out at great expense and set up a toll-free number, 866-229-2155. Or you can call 347-857-2680. And you can be on the show and you can find out what the future holds for you. Right here on the Ken Hudnall Show, every Thursday night you will see Robert McKnight, who is nationally known as a psychic.
Thank you.
There's a psychic fair coming up, I understand.
On the 22nd and 23rd here in El Paso, we'll have about 12 individuals that will be doing readings. And, of course, Ken, you forgot to tell the audience that we are bilingual also. If we have any Spanish speakers out there, I am fluent in Spanish. So we can take the calls in Spanish. Well, I don't think we want to do that, actually, but just as a courtesy. And
That's true, and I speak Southern fluently, and enough Spanish to get in trouble.
And we can also do sign language, too, if we have a video.
That is quite true. Now, you laugh, but very shortly, I'm going to see about adding Skype so we can televise this thing.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad we have a plan there. That's awesome.
You know, I got all kinds of plans. The question is, are they going to come to pass?
Well, with initiative and your karma, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, do you still see my syndication taking off?
Well, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one single step. And you've made a giant leap.
I did that.
We're doing good. Yeah, I think we're doing good.
Well, now, if we got some other callers who'd like to find out what the future holds, chance to get a reading by Robert McKnight, you can call 347-857-2680 or 866-229-2155. This is a man that knows what tomorrow holds, and he'll tell you about it today.
There you go.
So what are your plans? I know you have retired from your, for lack of a better term, the day job.
Okay.
You just keep doing readings?
Well, you know, I am retired and I'm enjoying my golden years. I prepared financially, so I don't have to worry about that. And of course, planning is very, very important in a person's life. So I'm doing a lot of traveling. I was up in New York recently. Spent the 4th of July in Washington. I've made several trips this year to Los Angeles, Dallas. It was really interesting. Once when I was on the plane from Dallas to New York, I was sitting next to this lady, and she struck up a conversation with a stewardess, with a flight attendant.
We have another caller. I'm going to bring them on while you're talking.
All right, that's fine. Well, as it turned out, I had done a...
You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Okay. Hello, Ken.
Well, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. This is something totally different here, and that's a familiar voice I hear as a guest there.
Robert, do you remember Earl?
No. I had a childhood friend that was named Earl.
And he's come back to join you.
Yeah,
really?
No, this is not him. So how are you both doing?
Well, then absolutely spectacular. I'm enjoying
I wanted to get you on so that you didn't get frustrated and hang up, which I've had a couple do tonight. But, Robert, why don't you tell me about the airplane?
That flight attendant, as it turned out, you know, these two ladies were speaking to each other, and the lady that was sitting next to me, you know, she started asking me some questions about who had done the reading on her, and she says, well, there was this guy in El Paso, but I don't remember his name. And then I interrupted her. I said, was his name Robert McKnight? Yeah, that was him. Well, that's me. Really? So I got a couple.
It's a small world.
Small world, yeah. You never know who you're going to run into. Now,
that's true. I was someplace. I think I was in Las Cruces.
Okay.
And I was minding my own business and heard some people start to talk about this really great book about ghosts. And I figured, well, somebody else has finally done one about Las Cruces. Mm-hmm. And it took 15 minutes for me to figure out they were talking about me.
Wow. Well, let's see, we're speaking with Earl, is that correct?
That's
yes,
Earl.
Sir, it is. Yep.
Okay. Earl, first of all, pardon me?
Go ahead.
Okay, where are you calling from?
Here in El Paso, east
okay,
side.
Okay, here in El Paso, okay. And,
yeah.
All right, that's fine. And give me your birthday, sir.
1-3-62.
1-3-62. Number
you're a mere
one...
child.
Yeah, I wish.
A number between 1 and 100.
52.
All right. All right, 1-3-62. All right, if you don't have any specific question.
Yeah, I was going to ask about something.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, before you do, just let me throw two things at you.
Okay.
Real quick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess we have spoken before, is what you said.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now, I don't know if I had mentioned this to you or not, but let's see if it still applies. There is a community here west of El Paso in New Mexico called Santa Teresa.
Right.
And I don't know if that means anything to you or the name Terry or Teresa, but I am picking up something with the letter T, and that's probably the first thing that comes to mind. Are you having any type of connection at this time or in the immediate past with Santa Teresa, New Mexico?
No, not really. But you know how this stuff works. In the next day or so, something may pop up. You never know.
Okay, are you in business or what?
No, I'm actually a truck driver, and I've had a job offer for local tomorrow. Am I getting? Do you predict I'm going to get it? And it's going to work out?
Well, transportation is going to be in your destiny or in your field. But let's look at one other location that would have the letter T. That could possibly be Tucson, Arizona, or it could possibly be San Antonio, Texas.
I just came from there today. I was I've been driving over the road. I just made a trip to San Antonio and back, and went there yesterday, got back today.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. You see, the name on Antonio would also be Tony, so that's where the connection comes in. San Antonio.
Oh, Tony, that rings a bell. My live-in girlfriend's son that lives with his name is Tony.
Oh, okay. Well, there's the connection with the letter T. Then you may get some type of a contract or some type of an offer with Tucson. Or possibly even maybe Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Interesting.
So the letter T is going to be in your field. Now you have your girlfriend's son, Tony. You came back from San Antonio, Santa Teresa, Tucson.
Right.
Those letters will be in your field. Now, I'm gonna throw something at you, Earl. And I'm pretty good at this, all right? So I definitely do want you to pay attention to what I'm going to tell you. You are an individual, absolutely, that has to take preventive measures dealing with cancer. You are a person, absolutely, that cannot smoke.
Yeah,
no,
I've never smoked.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a smoker.
That's good. All right, that's good.
You've always told me that, too, so I've always kept an eye on it.
Okay, you haven't any type of respiratory problems?
No.
All right. That now, of course, you know, it's not necessarily lung cancer, but, you know, you're still a young puppy as far as Ken and I are concerned. But you know what?
That's
I think true. I would start having my prostate checked out, you know, whenever you go to the doctor and make sure that there's no difficulties there.
Okay.
And other things, if you get any types of pains or discomforts, don't procrastinate.
Okay.
Do not procrastinate. Let me ask you something. Was there any breast cancer on your mother's side?
No, there's really no cancer on both sides of my family, but I do have diabetes and high blood pressure. Of course, I have them under control. I do a lot of exercise and so forth, you know.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm kind of certain that if you were to really dig into the family tree, that you would find some females in your family that did have breast cancer. But the obvious ones, of course, would be your mother and your maternal grandmother. But look at the peripheral also. Aunts, a great aunt.
I did have an aunt that died of cancer. I did have an aunt that died of cancer. Actually, two of them. One on each side.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It is there. But again, if you're doing all the preventive things that you mentioned, then you're good to go.
Good.
Okay. Now, there is one other issue. It's kind of it's something that you could perhaps take a look at. You're an individual that should never own a red vehicle.
Really?
A red vehicle with you is going to cause you some problems.
Did you know that 10 years ago I was driving a small red car and I got into an accident and a pretty bad one.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
About 10 and a half years ago.
Well, again, past, present, and future, a red vehicle with you is not in your favor. You had
that
accident.
Good.
You weren't injured. That's good. But try to stay away from being in red vehicles.
Yeah, I don't like red vehicles anyway.
All right,
I'll
good.
Keep an eye on that.
Okay, outstanding. All right, did you have a question, Earl?
No, I was just going to, I have a, I took a drug test for a local job, and I'm just wondering if you see in the future that working out for me. I hope it does.
It involves transportation, you said?
Yeah. I've been doing trucking for 20-plus years.
Yeah, that's not going to be an issue with you. That will not be an issue with you.
Good. It's good to hear you back and hear Ken back on the air, you know.
Well, we're glad to be back. Ken and I connect pretty good. He's a good old Southern boy, and I'm a good old Southern boy. And so we connect pretty good. I think we complement each other very well.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's good. I haven't... And I know he started his show on Monday or Tuesday, and I wasn't in town, and just the first time I called in, so this is kind of like old times again, huh?
Awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, I even set up a toll-free number for you.
Yep, and you...
What more can I do to make it easy to call?
You get a worldwide audience, too.
That's exactly right. Just got to get them to quit being shy and call in.
Well, you have less limitations on you, too.
That's right. And the fascinating thing about this system, I can have up to 30 callers online or on the air or on hold at any given time, so you don't have to wait for the call in front of you to finish.
Right.
Awesome.
Oh, I'm going to ask Robert a couple more questions. Is it okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you... As far as the United States, the next few years, I see turmoil heading this way because of economic reasons and bad leadership. Well, we've had poor leadership for a long time, but it's been steadily going downhill with corruption. Do you see possible civil war or a lot of civil unrest coming?
Well, not in the immediate future, but I've already made a prediction about that. On several occasions, the prediction that I made is the composition of the United States 100 years from now is not going to be what it is today.
Oh, well, I would imagine not. I'd be surprised it even exists 100 years from now.
I kind of suspect that it will, but there appears to be political discord. Not in the immediate future. Immediate future to me is like, in this particular regard, 50 to 75 years. I think everything will be more or less status quo. But 100 years from now, there's going to be some major disturbances, absolutely.
Wow.
There's no question about it. And the other prediction that I made, but this one may not happen in the next 100 years. It may happen in the next 200 to 300 years. there's going to be a horrific, horrific earthquake that's going to take place between Chicago and New Orleans. That is literally going to split the United States in two. The Mississippi River is going to be redefined, and you'll actually you may not even be able to see from eastern the United States to the western part. But there's
kinda
going to
like
be a major earthquake, possibly 8.5 Richter scale, 8 mass destruction. Probably millions of people will be wiped out.
Oof.
But it's going to be something massive.
Wow.
That sounds like the Missouri Fault is going to be active again.
Well, I don't...
In fact, the largest earthquake in recorded history was in Missouri.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And that's close to the Mississippi River, too, right? Or something around there?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it runs right through St. Louis and all the way up through there. That's interesting. You would think that your first guess would be Californian and, you know, the problems they've had with earthquakes.
No, it's not going to be California. It's going to be from Chicago to New Orleans. And the destruction is going to be massive.
What do you predict? Western Europe is in kind of disarray. What do you predict is going to happen there in the next year?
I've made a couple of major predictions dealing with France. France is, there's going to be major turmoil in France, and it's going to be dealing with individuals that cannot assimilate into the French culture.
Yeah, a lot of it, possibly the Muslim population there.
Exactly.
They've had trouble.
Exactly.
And that's all over Western Europe, including, you know, England and the Netherlands and Germany.
It's going to be more prominent in France. There's where the seeds of disharmony and discord are going to be planted. It's going to be in France. And again, France
civil
is going
war?
To a major. Well, there's going to be a lot of civil conflict. Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, also another thing too. We haven't made this prediction on this venue yet. But for all of those individuals out there who are still hoping that Osama bin Laden is going to be captured, Osama bin Laden doesn't even exist. I mean, he was turned into molecules in December of, I believe it was 2001. He doesn't exist. All of these tapes that are coming out are things that have been made with computers or with a technology that we have at hand. And also, Fidel Castro is dead.
That's a good possibility. And actually, the leader of North Korea may be dead, too.
Kim Il-jung or whatever the guy's name is. But
yeah, Kim Jong, mentally ill.
Fidel Castro turned into room temperature, I believe it was in February of last year, or between February and April or May of last year. But Fidel Castro is not around.
You think his brother's running things?
Well, his brother's running things, but they just don't want to admit that the guy's assumed room temperature.
Big loss, too, right?
Oh, well, you know, that guy, you know, he was an egomaniac. But anyway, he's not around, and Osama bin Laden isn't around. Well, you know, there was another prediction that I made when the United States invaded Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and Saddam Hussein disappeared. I think we invaded, I believe it was in March, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Ken? March or April?
I don't remember specifically, but I think you're right.
Yeah, somewhere around
it was early in the year.
Yeah. Well, I predicted that Saddam Hussein would be found in December. And guess what? They found him in December. So, you know, that prediction was right on target also.
Uh-huh.
And I guess we can probably talk about this now because it already occurred. I guess about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I had another vision about an assassination. And I did call up the authorities, And the prediction that I made did occur about 3 or 4 days later. The assassination didn't occur, but the attempt was made. And I predicted it would be on a president. I thought it might be Obama, but it was Jimmy Carter. And
oh, I didn't know nothing about that.
Yeah,
it was kept rather quiet.
Yeah, there was an assassination attempt on him. I said it was going to be in a place with the letter P, and I believe they attempted to blow him up or something, and I think it was in Palestine or over there. And,
yes.
And the Gaza
Strip. Oh, he was visiting the Middle East.
He was in the Middle East.
Yeah, he wanted to tell them how they ought to be doing things, and somebody took exception to it.
But we did did make the call to the authorities, and so we did get some kudos on that.
Good. Well, heck, he's up in his 90s. Isn't he in his early 90s already?
Who, Jimmy Carter?
Yeah.
No, he's not quite that old. He looks like a walking wrinkle, but he's not.
He's always looked like that, even since he was president. Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
Yeah, the smartest in his family, Billy, has long been dead, but and
hey, Ken,
even his own mother took exception to some of the things he did.
Hey, Ken, how much is a bottle of or can of Billy beer nowadays? What would that sell at auction?
If you can find one, you could probably get 50 or 60 bucks for it.
I've got one. Got it at a I got it at a garage sale, actually a state sale a couple of years ago. Unopened and everything. I remember when it first came out, there was cases of that stuff in my hometown. I wish I would have bought about 20 cases of it and never touched it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it just didn't sell. And, Billy tried a lot of things, and very few of them worked. But he was a relatively nice guy.
How did he die? Did he drink himself to death?
Quit breathing.
Well, that's how most of us die.
No, some of us die of embarrassment.
Die embarrassment.
But, the interesting thing is Ms. Lillian, Jimmy Carter's mother, mm-hmm. was speaking at the University of Georgia at some event. And she was asked by a reporter if she could change anything in her life, what would she change? And she thought for a moment, she said, I would have remained a virgin.
Oh, man! That is funny.
Hey, she spoke her mind.
You got any ghost tours coming?
Well, I keep being asked to do special tours. The problem is that it gets dark so late and it kind of loses something during a ghost tour in the daylight.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've been asked to do some private ghost hunts. I did one at El Paso City Hall last week with a group.
Did you?
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be a joke to this.
No, I'm serious. I did one at El Paso City Hall.
Anything happened?
And we saw some things that were very strange.
What? 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 Huh?
Well, in front of the mayor's office, you could smell the strong smell of cigar smoke, and that smoking building for Lord knows how long.
Right.
And then as I was leaving the building, I glanced up, and there was somebody looking at me from the fifth floor. And I went back in and told them, and they went up, and there was nobody there. And, in fact, they sat on that floor for an hour waiting to see if they could see something. And then as the main group was leaving, as they walked out, they glanced up, and the curtains on the fifth floor were closed. They put the stuff in the trunk of their car, straightened up and looked, and the curtains were open. And they can see a figure moving behind them on the fifth
floor. These things know you're looking at them, and they stay just out of sight. I really believe that. They'll let you get a glimpse at them every now and then, but I'm pretty sure they, because the experiences I've had, they always catch you off guard when you least expect it. And
well, of course.
I think they get a kick out of that. I think that's their how they get their whoopies or whatever. It seems to be.
Look at it this way. They're dead. What other kind of excitement can they get other than scaring the crap out of you every chance they get?
Hey, that's probably their highlight of the year.
That's right. Can't you see them getting together and chuckling about it? And then I've been asked to come back and do another one in the tunnels beneath the Sarco.
Oh, how about, are you still in touch with the ghost hunting group you used to have on your old show on Friday?
Well, they're going to be here on Friday, tomorrow.
Well, I need to call in tomorrow.
You need to call in every night.
Well, I know. I'm just getting used to this. It's a little bit different than regular radio. But actually, once you get on the phone, it's the same.
That's right. There's very little difference.
Yeah, I'm kicking back, having me a beer, listening to you, and just like old times. Like I said, it's just that it's not on regular radio, which, like I said, this doesn't have the limitations and other problems.
That's right. Well, Robert, you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm listening. I'm right here.
Okay.
I'm ready to rock and roll. We got another caller. I'm ready to.
Well, we don't have one yet. You know, folks like to listen when they first, hear something interesting. They'll sit and listen, and then they'll get up the nerve and probably call about 3 minutes before we go off the air.
Yeah. Well, it does happen.
But, you know, it took us a while to build.
Mm-hmm. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought I'd lost you.
Yeah, I know. I heard.
Yeah, there are strange sounds caused by, since everything is computer controlled, occasionally the computer hiccups.
Oh, okay.
It sounded like it just cut us all off for a second, like it was trying to. That's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Robert, what do you have on your schedule? Do you have some stuff going?
Well, I've got a huge family reunion coming up this weekend. People from all over the U.S., people that I haven't seen since I was a kid. So we're all going to be getting together on Friday, reacquainting ourselves with lost family members and things like that.
Robert?
Yes, sir.
We've got another caller. Earl, I appreciate it.
All right. Robert, Mr. Hudnall, I appreciate it. And you guys have a good night, just like old times.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank
you.
Bye-bye, Robert.
Okay, good night.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Hi, I would like to have a reading.
What's your first name?
Myra.
Myra? Oh, okay. How are you?
Pretty good, and you?
Oh, I'm just having a fun time.
All right, that sounds good. Well, what is your birthday?
3/27/73.
Okay, and a number between 1 and 100?
89.
That's interesting. 8. 8 seems to be your number for whatever reason. The number 8. Does that mean anything to you?
The number 8? No. I just like it.
What about on your computer?
What do you mean on my computer? If I found an 8?
Right. Well, anyway, the number 8 is a very strong number for you, and also it indicates money issues will be in your favor. So that could mean maybe something where income, money coming in, new job, new opportunities, dealing with money issues. Pardon me?
I just got a new job.
Okay, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And also, 3/27/73 indicates a lot of movement dealing with apparently trips, vacations, things outside of the area. And
that's pretty good.
Also, something dealing with a vehicle. Something dealing with a vehicle. If you haven't had any problems recently with a vehicle, like maybe tires or brakes or anything like that, there seems to be something happening with a vehicle. Did you have a specific question?
Like an accident?
Well, not necessarily
yes,
an accident, but a mechanical problem. Maybe an issue with brakes or tires, something along that line. Did you have a problem recently, like having to stop suddenly or hit your brakes or somebody almost ran into you or crossed your path and you had to hit the brakes or something like that?
No, so I have to watch out for that in the future, I guess.
Yeah, be careful with that. Is there any particular question you want me to answer for you?
Yes, I would like to know if I'm going to be able to get that property I want to.
Actually, anything dealing with property changes or movement with houses or apartments, probably within the next maybe 2 to 4 weeks. But
and
it should,
what do you see? Do you see a house? Do you see an apartment?
No, it's probably going to be a residence.
A residence.
It'll probably be a residence. Also, one thing that is definitely constant, especially with the number 89, absolutely, at some point, a two-story house, if you don't already live in a two-story
house. I'm looking into a two-story house.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A two-story house is definitely on the table. And other than that, health issues with you should be okay. Just be careful.
What about my son? Can I ask you about my son?
What's his birthday?
4502.
4502 would probably indicate some types of behavioral problems, but as time goes by, behavior does improve. Academics should be okay, and basically. Regular, normal life. But the academics should be okay. Behavior does improve, and as time goes by.
Okay. So, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
How do you see, like, my love life?
Okay. There will be two marriages for you.
Only two?
Well,
only two?
Well, as of right now, there looks like there's going to be two.
Okay. And do you know what time
frame for what? A marriage?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably looking at anywhere from the next. Let's see, you're 73, right? Actually, it could be knocking at your door.
Okay.
It could be knocking at your door. Maybe that's the person.
I don't
who's
have
just
any proposals, but let's see.
Okay, well, we'll see how it plays out.
Well, you never can tell. They could show up just any minute.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. Somebody goes knocking at your door this evening. Maybe that's the one.
Can I give my address? No, I'm kidding.
You probably have half of El Paso there.
That's quite true.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Appreciate you calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, we've got open lines. If you want to get a reading from Robert McKnight, we've got... about 50 minutes left. Number to call is 347-857-2680 or toll-free 866-229-2155. And you can find out what the future holds for you. Well, what do you think about this new format, Robert?
Well, I think it's awesome, actually. The only if there's any problem, there's no break here. I thought maybe we had a minute or two, but there's no commercial break.
Well, that's a good idea. What we'll do is we'll take a little music break right here.
Oh, okay.
And be back in, about a minute and a half?
That sounds awesome.
All right.
Okay,
then we shall return shortly.
The year was 1970, a hee-haw honey smiled upon my lunchbox, carried my baloney. I thought I wanted Cindy, Jan and Marcia Brady, but what was left was Kathy Lee, Epstein, hee-haw honey. The year was 1977, now she's saved and going to heaven. How she names that tune, each seventh grade afternoon. SpaghettiOs and Kathy Lee soothe my teen anxiety, set my isolation free. Now she's Johnson Kathy Lee, stalking Kathy Lee, stalking Kathy Lee. Don't you think she'd like me Kathy Lee? The year was 1980, 10th grade was upon me. How she gets to gloat as she sings to sell a boat. For Carnival she cruises and for Joan London schmoozes. Kathy's in the money and meets her Frankie Honey. Stalking Kathy Lee, stalking Kathy Lee. Don't you think she'd like me Kathy Lee? Fast forward, now I'm 20, in a five-floor walk-up renty, with my bulimic roomie. Each morning we watch Tubi, in my health kitchen, with Regis she is bitchin'. Kathy's in a cabaret, that's how I'll spend my birthday. Stalking Kathy Lee, stalking Kathy Lee. Don't you think she'd like me Kathy Lee? The waiter took some pity, got my note to Kathy. I wrote, I struggle too, I'm a singer just like you. In sequence sipping tea, with such sincerity. It's really, really, really tough, that's what she says to me. Stalking Kathy Lee, stalking Kathy Lee. Don't you think she'd like me Kathy Lee? A Christmas CD and QVC, Broadway shows, Walmart clothes, sweatshop woes at Frank she blows. Caught him in a bed with Bluesy, flight attendant they call Susie. I say...
Well, that was Stalking Kathy Lee.
By
Meg Flather. What do you think about that, Robert?
I think it was awesome.
She is a host on Home Shopping Network. She's also a singer and songwriter.
Okay. She's got a beautiful voice, actually.
I had her on Monday night. She was on my first show.
Really? Oh, wow. Super. Yeah, she does have a beautiful voice.
And she's going to be back from time to time.
Cool.
We're adding a number of segments. There's going to be a movie review segment. And, you know, made... comment about the fact that we've just gone straight through. I'm in the process of getting, you know, the clock worked out, and you know, we're certainly wanting to get advertisers.
Okay.
That's the lifeblood of a radio show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, I'm always getting questions when folks realize who I am. In looking at a show like this, you know, Unsolved Mysteries, Lost Treasures, Ghosts, you know, psychics, authors, there's always the question of how do you know if the individual is really what they say they are? For example, and you know this, I've gone through a whole lot of psychics. And, you know, you've been with me from the beginning, but I've had a lot of them come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Because the readings they were doing weren't really connecting with the people being read.
Okay.
So how do you determine if somebody really is a psychic? Is there a way to separate the wheat from the chaff?
Well, actually, yeah, there is. What I attempt to do before I make a major prediction with a person is I try to get some peripheral connectors, things that that mean something to the individual specifically.
Mm-hmm.
For example, with Earl, the letter that came out with him was the letter T. And, of course, that's a name, Tommy, Tony, Teresa, or whatever. And
yeah.
The gentleman had just gone to San Antonio, of course. You know, Antonio would be Tony. He
mm-hmm.
has a stepson named Tony. I think he said he was living with him. And
mm-hmm.
So that was one of my connectors with him. The transportation industry was with him. And remember what I mentioned at the very beginning of the broadcast, is sometimes we have to maybe drag some things out of individuals that maybe up front they're not tuned into, like with Earl, and I mentioned, was there any breast cancer in his mother or his grandmother? He said, no, there wasn't. But then as we inquired a little bit further, we found out that he had two aunts passed away from,
yep.
I know he said cancer, but I don't know if he mentioned breast cancer. Or not.
He didn't specifically state that, no.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think he did. But again, it was on the female side, not on the male side.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, those connectors were there. Then when I make those types of connections, and I usually try to make two or three, with Earl, the issue about the red car, he had been in an accident with a red car, and thank God there wasn't any serious injuries, but
mm-hmm.
but again, the potential was there. Then that opens me up. That gives me the confidence that whatever prediction I'm going to make on the individual is,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit more confident about that prediction because my connectors were there, the associations were there. It's sort of like a continuum.
Right.
One thing leads to another, to another, to another. And usually that's what happens when I speak with an individual, I'll pick up a series of things, maybe three, four, five, six things immediately. The first lady that called Karen, the thing about the property.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was already there. She had three parcels that she was selling. The letter J was there with her father, her brother. So that gives me the confidence to make the prediction that she's going to live to be, you know, maybe close to 90. So, you know, all those things are on the table. The other thing with Karen I didn't mention, I don't think I did, but was a white vehicle.
No, you didn't.
I don't think I mentioned that, yeah. But I did see a white vehicle with her, possibly maybe a sedan or a truck or an SUV. But that's okay because that's a safe vehicle for her. That's the
mm-hmm.
vehicle that she needs to be in to avoid any types of accidents or any types of difficulties on the road. So, once I make those connectors and I feel confident, then I can make major predictions dealing with perhaps maybe life and death issues, finance issues, interpersonal relationships, family, those types of things. So it gives me the confidence to continue doing the reading, that I'm right on target. Oftentimes people throw me off track. They throw me off track, but I don't think they do it. Sometimes they do it intentionally. I do know that. But
no,
we've
had it happen on the show.
Yeah, we have. We have had it. On another radio station, I recalled one girl just recently, and I even told the moderator, this girl here is going to be, everything I'm going to tell her is going to be no. Everything I'm going to tell her, watch. So I just invented a bunch of things, about 8 or 10 things, and I just threw them at her, and everything was a no. No, 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 no. But I knew where she was coming from. You know, she wanted to embarrass me, and you know, she didn't do a good job of it because I already had, you know, read where she was coming from. So, mm-hmm. you know, we just dropped the call and went on to another caller. But that's what
I don't know
that's
why people want to waste their time doing things like that.
Well, you know, there's all types of people in this world, and some people have too much time on their hands, and, you know, they just want to make life difficult for other individuals. But we,
yeah.
you know, we're wise enough and mature enough to avoid those types of people. And I get when I get phone calls for individuals that want personal readings, even just by the sound of their voice, on some occasions, I even tell the individual, you know what, I'm all booked up for the next 2 weeks. Call me in about 2 to 3 weeks, hoping that they'll become discouraged and not call back because I just don't want to do a reading on them. They're just so full of negative energy, and anything that you tell them is not going to sink in. Just not going to sink in. They want their own answers the way they want them. They want the solutions the way they want them, and they're not going to listen to anything other than what they've already made up their mind on.
Hmm.
But like I say, it takes all sorts to make the world turn. And
Yeah, that's lucky for sure.
You and I are smart enough to outwit some of these individuals and get the right callers on the line and have fun, enjoy the readings, blow some minds, and hopefully you know, redirect individuals into a positive direction.
Well, you know, that's the, from my point of view, the purpose of the show is to have fun and to maybe educate.
Absolutely. The most important thing is to have fun. If we quit having fun, Ken.
Time to do something else.
Hasta la vista, baby. But as
Excuse
long
me.
As you got a joke or, you know, some good commentary, we can keep going till doomsday.
Well, that's true. And, you know, connecting with people, especially from around the country, just mm-hmm. makes this even more fascinating. You know,
Absolutely.
From looking at my monitor here, I can tell that, you know, I've got listeners in probably 2/3 of the states. And there's another category that appears to be overseas. I haven't quite got that confirmed yet, but there's a lot of people listening, which means there's some common ground, and if we get enough common ground, instead of folks fighting, they're going to be talking.
Absolutely. And you know, word of mouth is important also. You know, this format that you have, it's going to explode. Word of mouth, people that have similar interests will email each other and, you know, give them the preliminary information, check it out, and it's, you know, it's an entertaining show. We have a lot of fun, and in the process, we do contribute to giving the individuals insight as to their journey through life, and I think that's very, very important.
That's right.
That's really interesting, too. One aspect is that you know, even as a youngster, I grew up Roman Catholic and serving as an altar boy every day at church. And of course, everybody's hopes for me that one day I'd become a priest. And you know, I did dabble with that not too long, and you know, trying to help people and you know their spiritual foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come full cycle. It's come full cycle. You know, a lot of individuals that we do consultations on, some of them are lost souls. And we talk about spirituality. We talk about their connection, you know, with their maker, with their higher power. And we do impact people. We really do. We've changed a lot of people's lives for the better. And I'm really proud of some of these moments that we put smiles on people's faces. We've changed their frowns to smiles, and the tears of sadness have become tears of joy. And that's happened so many times, and so many times young ladies that come for readings and they're pregnant, they're confused, they don't know what to do, their boyfriend's left them, you know, the hit and run thing, and And should I have the child? Should I give it up for adoption? Should I?
Well, we have another caller.
All right, let's rock and roll.
You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Ken?
Yes.
This is Lupi.
How are
you? I just want to tell you, can you hear it? I'm actually on the computer. They just finished fixing it. I came in when that man was saying that there was no vampires or werewolves in his book. And I'm all excited because I get to hear you again.
Well, you're actually listening to a earlier show. What you need to do is go to the, have you seen the red bar that says current episode?
Current episode? Hold on.
Let me, going to the show page.
Off?
Hold on a second. Going to the show page.
Oh, shoot.
Episode on air.
Oh, click. God. Matsela Crash Reporter.
Well, what you need to do is get my most the show I'm doing now. You were listening.
Okay, and it says recent.
You were listening to an on demand episode. It would tell you the air date.
Oh, okay.
The one you were listening to was, I think, the author I had on last night, because he talked about there were no werewolves or vampires in his book.
Oh, okay. So who's the guest right now?
Robert McKnight, doing readings.
Oh, good. Can I have one?
By all means.
Sure. Sure. We're speaking
Mr.
with
Mr. McKnight, what I want to know. Oh, there you go again.
Okay.
What I want to know is, will they ever find out the truth about the citizenship of Obama? Once and for all.
Well, you know, that's probably not the right question. The question should be, is there anybody going to accept it?
Mm-hmm.
I think people already know the truth, but they just don't want to accept it.
I think you're probably right.
What can be done about it? I want them to know. I want the whole world to know that he is a liar.
Well, you know what politician isn't a liar?
Yeah,
you know,
but not to the extreme that he's a president and is not supposed to be in there. Because remember what the Constitution says.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, but again, the issue is not what the truth is. The issue is do people accept it?
That's right,
you know,
because
like,
there's still people with stars in their eyes.
There you go.
Oh, God.
Just like, you know, just like O.J. Simpson, you know. Everybody knew that this guy, you know, and I know that guy was guilty also. And you know, it's really interesting talking about that. And I don't know if you ever researched this or not, but you know that incident with the glove? If it don't fit, you must acquit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know that... O.J. Simpson was taking medications, and one of the consequences of the medications he was taking was inflammation of the joints, and that caused his hands to swell, and that's why the glove did not fit, because his hands are swollen because of the medications he was taking.
Well, there is a book out, I've got a copy of it, written by a psychiatrist. One of her patients told her he was the one that actually killed the people, and he was hired to do it in order to frame O.J. And I've been trying to track her down, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to run her down yet.
Okay.
I'd like to get her on and talk about that book.
Wow. I want to know more about that.
Hey, that's what this
show does.
Because
I always used to like O.J. Simpson until all this stuff happened. It's just like with Michael Jackson. I liked him when he was little, but then he grew up and he wanted to become white and he wanted to do this and he wanted to do that and did all the wrong things, and I don't have no faith in anybody like that.
Well, he certainly raised a lot of eyebrows with some of his antics.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Well, you know, Michael Jackson and I have a thing in common. Both of us were born on August 29th.
Oh, really?
So,
so you're a late Virgo with some Libra in you.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. We'd be more probably influenced by Leo than by Libra. But we are Virgos and full-blown Virgos at that. And Michael Jackson didn't understand what the demons were with him. Or the demons were addictions.
Mm-hmm.
That was gonna be his destroyer. Addiction, sex addictions, alcohol.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of sex addiction.
Well, no,
sure?
There isn't. As long as it's not deviant.
Oh,
well, you're right about that.
As long as it's not aberrant.
His was just a unusual attitude taken to extremes.
Yes.
There you go, yeah. There you go.
Very good. I really believe that, too. But, I mean, he went to too many extremes, and I don't like it when he was always with little kids. Because nobody knows.
He's been spoofed in so many movies. Because of that, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Scary Movie 4, and they had Michael Jackson on there.
Really?
I didn't know. I don't like spooky movies like that.
Oh, Scary Movie 4 is funny. It's a spoof of the horror movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
But Leslie Nielsen and, you know, strange people like that.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. What was it, Gun and a Half, that he did with
Naked Gun,
33 and a half,
or something like that.
Yeah, he had two of them. I have them somewhere in all my movies.
Oh, he did more than two. They did the series, and they did three movies, I think.
Oh. Well, I only have two of them. But they're pretty funny sometimes, depending on the mood.
Yep.
And what sign are you, Ken?
What sign am I?
Mm-hmm.
Taurus. Yield.
A who?
I'm a Taurus.
A Taurus. Oh,
yep.
My God. You
that
are
means
nice
I'm shy man. And retiring.
With a devil behind
Ford.
You, honey.
What was that, Robert?
That means you were made by Ford.
That is quite true.
That's right. And I used to own a Taurus, and it was a pretty good car, actually.
You're still a good
too.
Kid, Ken.
What's that?
I said you're still a good kid.
Well, you know, I try. I'm just shy and retiring, and everybody tries to pick on me.
They're always picking on me, too, and they're not supposed to.
Well...
Oh,
you know, now that I'm back on the air, I'm going to do some picking of my own.
Good. I hope that you don't pick me out.
No. I don't harass my callers like some people do.
Oh, okay. Good. That's why I love you, Ken. That's why everybody loves you. Because you're a good guy when it comes to the radio. You,
well,
Jerome, and Greg, and
I
remember David
week,
Kay.
Beginning next week, I'm adding a political segment.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's going to be wonderful. You know what? Earlier, because they were still fixing my computer when this other person called me, and they allowed me to hear what was going on in the radio with you and I forget who was on it. But you were talking about with Earl, the truck driver.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I almost went through the roof. I was so happy. I love to hear him talk. I love it when he calls. I like it when Susan calls. And when Central Dave used to call,
well, we
except
need,
he
we need
doesn't
to get
have
all
a computer.
Old, you know, to call, the thing, you know, for some reason folks think it's different because it's now on the Internet. It's not. It's just like calling the station.
Yep.
I even have a toll-free number set
it.
Up so it doesn't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm. That's why I love it. And I'm wanting you back on the radio, though, because when you're on the radio, I'm able to turn all my five radios on, and if I go into one room, I can still hear you. Like right now, the TV's on.
Well, we're working
on
that. We may have a solution for that problem shortly.
Very good. I'm so proud of you, Mr. Ken. You and your wife have been put through the grinder, and I believe it's time that you come out on top.
Well, that would certainly make us happy.
Well, of course. Of course. And then you can have Yolanda back, and you can have Mr. McKnight back, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of the other people that you always used to have that are not into.
I'm going to get the old gang together.
Good.
It just takes a while to set it up.
Good. I'll
well,
be hanging in there waiting for you to hear you more and more. And I hope and pray that you start getting millions and millions of calls.
That would be nice. We're set up to handle them.
Okay, well, I'm going to let some more people know about you.
I appreciate that.
Do you have anybody in Chicago? Can you be heard there?
Yeah, I can be heard at every place in the world. They've got the Internet.
Oh, okay. Then I'll go ahead and I've got like about 15 states where I can ask people that I know to go ahead and listen to you.
Yeah,
okay?
And if you will go to my show page, you can mark me as a favorite host so that it will always pop up about what I'm doing.
Okay. All righty.
I appreciate it.
Somebody else might want to call. So I'm going to let you go. You all have a good night. You too, Mr. McKnight.
Thank you.
And I love you, Mr. Ken Hutnell. You and your wife are wonderful people.
Appreciate that.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. We started out with a call from Illinois, and now we've got calls from El Paso.
All right.
But, you know, it was a little slow when we started out on the station before, but it picked up where we were getting, I was getting between, 40 and 50 calls a night?
Absolutely.
More when you were on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to get folks calling again.
Well, they'll be there.
Yeah, it's terrible to be forgotten like I've been.
Well, again, the calls will be there when when it rains, it pours.
That's quite true.
It is, yeah.
And once I've got somebody who sits in with me as a kind of a co-host,
mm-hmm.
we've also got we can do chat rooms. While we're on the air, I mean, we've got more capability than we know what to do with.
Cool. It'll soon play out, that's for sure.
But the number of there's a whole lot of folks listening from what I'm looking at here. They're just as usual shy about calling in.
Have we given out the number again?
Yes, it's 347-857-2680 or toll free 866-229-2155. And you can get a reading from Robert McKnight and find out what the future holds for you. And in spite of rumors to the contrary, we don't bite. We occasionally may snap, but we don't bite. So there's absolutely nothing standing between you and calling except going to the phone and making the call.
Okay.
And the toll-free works anywhere in the country. And the 347 exchange is a Northeastern exchange, but it gets you right here on the show. So you said you had a family reunion coming up.
We got a family reunion, some people coming in from all over the country. Like I say, people that I haven't seen probably since I was, 5-10 years old. And as time goes by, there's fewer and fewer of us. So we decided to get together and exchange photographs of individuals that are part of the family, people that maybe we've never met, or probably even individuals that aren't going to be able to show up for whatever reason. But, as time goes by, we have to, reacquaint ourselves with those that we love, that were part of our family, and exchange war stories or, just bits of information about the family tree. And it's really fascinating, because every time we do get together, we always learn something new. Always something.
Well, speaking of family trees, mm-hmm. I spent a number of years writing a family history and never published it. Now it's outdated.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It's been kind of a tradition that somebody every generation tries to write a family history and never gets it published.
Never gets it, yeah. Yeah.
I've written 35 books, and I can't get my family history out.
Wow. Well, I'm sure it involves a lot of noted personalities, people that had things to do with American history.
Actually, one of my ancestors led the stamp revolt.
Really?
Yeah, we've been fighting everybody over the years.
Yeah, Kendalls like to stir up the pot there, don't they?
And in fact, the Civil War, I had family on both sides.
Really? Wow. But I believe you once told me that you had family that fought at Gettysburg or Shiloh.
Actually, at Shiloh was my direct ancestor. He was a surgeon who wanted to be an infantry officer for some God knows why reason.
All right.
And at Gettysburg, a lot of collateral ancestors who were with Pickett.
Pickett, yeah, George Pickett.
Yeah,
sure.
they went charging across the field, and some of them didn't come back. And luckily, enough of them came back to keep the family going.
Yeah. Well, that's been one of my points that I want to do before I check out. I want to go to Gettysburg.
It's an interesting place.
Yeah, and they want to make a commercial parking lot out of the place too, don't they?
Well, they keep talking about that. I don't think it's going to happen. Too many people don't want any changes made.
Yeah.
In fact, I even wrote a book about some of the ghost of Gettysburg.
Oh, that must have been fascinating.
The picture on the cover is actually one that was taken at the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see two figures with their weapons at the right shoulder arms marching across the field.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine that there's a lot of energy over there. And I heard the similar thing about the battlefield at Verdun over in France.
Now, one of the spookiest battlefields out there is Chickamauga.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, there's a creature that has chased people off the battlefield.
At Chickamauga?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just the location of the battle freaked out the Union. They had... They felt that there were too many mice holes and possibly too many mice were going to come out. They had no idea that Lee had sent Longstreet to join that Confederate army.
Okay.
So they went in thinking they were against a much smaller force. Got their head handed to them.
Wow. Yeah, Yeah, that was a pretty bloody battle, I believe.
Oh, it was. The Native Americans had stories about that area for hundreds of years. They called it the Valley of Death.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. About I was up there in Washington a couple of weeks ago, and we went up there to Lee's house up there at Arlington, and they got a common monument over there for soldiers of both the Confederacy and the Union. I think there's about 300 or 400 of them buried in one location. You walk by there and you can feel the energy there. I mean, it just pours right out.
Well, a place that is really where you can really feel the energy is Franklin, Tennessee, Battle of Franklin. It was fought around this antebellum home. Mm-hmm. And Braxton Bragg, not Bragg, Hood,
yeah,
had been reaming out his generals for being cowards. And when, so everybody wanted to prove they weren't a coward, and they lost more Confederate generals in that battle than any other.
Really?
And they laid them all out on the porch, side by side. And the bloodstain has never been able to be gotten up.
Really?
And
the Battle of what now?
Franklin.
Franklin, okay. I'm not familiar
with it. Yeah, it was outside of Nashville.
Okay.
Now, there were a number of major battles up in that area, Stones River, Franklin, and the Battle of Nashville.
Okay.
I took a tour when I was, I had lived there until I was 16 or 17 and never took the time to go take the tour. So when I went back, I went to take it. And inside that house, the walls were so thick, you couldn't hear what was going on outside.
Really?
Well, none of us knew that a major thunderstorm was coming.
Uh-huh.
And, the tour guide was good. She had everybody engrossed in the fact that, all these people came there to fight. And then she said, and what really shook up the family were the sounds of the heavy guns, and suddenly there was a crack of thunder. People screamed and scattered. It just kind of set the mood,
right.
And then they were talking about the fact that the house is quite a number of ghost stories come out of that house.
Interesting.
And the house I grew up in, which was the original part built in 1815, was right on near the Stones River battlefield, and I was positive there were others in that house besides us.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my grandmother said I was just crazy.
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, those incidents dealing with Gettysburg, I've heard quite a few stories about that, about how some of the wounded soldiers still are walking around that house. I forgot the name of the owner of that house.
Well, there was a little boy,
or the driver,
who was being chased. I think he was the drummer boy. Either Union or Confederate. I don't remember which side he was. And he, there was a college there. And he ran into one of the dorms, and he ran into the room with some girls who hit him. And that was snowing. It was colder than, or storming, one or the other. It was very cold, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And they put him out on the window ledge because every room was being searched. And when they went to, the search was over and they went to get him, they couldn't find him. Never did find him. But from time to time, people report seeing a figure looking in the window.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's a story about the ladies in one of the college buildings who were leaving for the day. The elevator didn't stop where they wanted to stop. It took them down to the basement. When the door opened, they're looking at a hospital.
Right.
With people you know, on the table, and the doctor kept motioning for him to come join him. And for some reason, it kind of freaked him out.
Yeah, I do recall that, yeah. Yeah, there's quite a lot of incidents about that. I do recall reading that, seeing it, when they got off the elevator, the medical personnel were taking care of the injured or the wounded. Yeah, I do remember that.
That's right. It's, the stories are just absolutely amazing that, about that whole area.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that, that I do dabble in on, not too often anymore, but, it does involve, individuals that have crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of phone calls, correspondence from people who have lost loved ones, and they need to communicate with them and ask them some questions. Maybe some issues were left unsettled, and we do find closure, and that's very interesting. Yeah, because there is a lot of energy out there dealing with the spirits, dealing with people who have passed on, and it does exist. It exists in a different plane, but it is out. It is there. It is definitely out there. I've seen it so many times.
Well, there was a research study a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the teaching hospitals, they were going to prove once and for all, was there a soul? And they figured the way to do it is that when you died, if your soul left the body, did the soul have weight?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the body weight changed at death, then something happened.
Right, right.
So there were a number of people in the ICU who were, not long for this world. So they attached scales to the bed, and almost without fail, when one of those in the test group died, their body weight went down about a half a pound.
Interesting.
So apparently, the soul weighs about a half a pound.
I haven't read anything like that, but that doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me at all.
And unfortunately, we have, the skeptics who, no matter what you do, are not going to believe, that ghosts are real.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things that I've, doing the ghost tours especially, some of the things I've seen, ain't no doubt in my mind there's ghosts wandering around out there.
Well, you're the man when it comes to ghosts or the supernatural. You are the king, the king of pop, the king of soul, the king of ghost.
Well, I understand I have imitators out there. One of them even pretends to be me, and I'm not sure what kind of thrill he gets out of that, but apparently he keeps doing it.
Oh,
one day I'll have to deal with that.
Okay, well, remember, imitation is the best form of flattery.
Most sincerest form of flattery, and I must be the most flattered person in the country.
Well, you'll
be more
imitated as time goes by, especially with this format we got now.
Yeah, but this format is a lot of fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, frankly, it's not near as difficult as, being at a terrestrial radio station.
Right.
Of course, keeping records is the biggest pain in the rear. There's no requirement for me to do it, but I do it anyway.
Right. Well, I kind of like this format and the venue because I can be here at my house, relaxed, get a cup of coffee or, sit in my easy chair and not be threatened by a bunch of electronic equipment or flashing lights or, producers.
People knocking on the windows wanting to come in.
Yeah, there you go. Or producers worried about time elements or commercials or whatever.
They can't preempt me for baseball or football games.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, so, you know, sit on the easy chair and just, you know, enjoying the conversations with the individuals and picking up their energy. And, you know, there's a little bit of ego involved, too. I get a big thrill out of, you know, people when they do their wows and oohs and, gosh, how did you know that? And, you know, nobody knew
when
that.
When you do anything in the entertainment industry, there's a little bit of ego involved.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have the ego, you wouldn't be doing it.
You're probably right. You're probably
now,
right.
I always say I have no ego involved in this at all. I'm just having fun. But
There you go.
As we go on and this builds, and you know, we'll get back up to where we were when I left the station. Where we, by the time we had one call finished, we had two on hold. So
there you go.
Of course, here we can have up to 30 on hold.
And then another couple of thousand trying to get in.
Yeah. Well, that's where the chat room comes in. They can call and fuss about the fact they can't get through. But it they'll have to go some not to be able to get through with this setup.
Right, yeah. But, it's been very enjoyable. We've had a lot of fun. And And, you know, look forward to, to next week with all the callers and, you know, getting people from all around the country and when we go worldwide, getting the calls from Europe or whatever, that's going to be a lot of fun. The only problem that I've experienced in the past is seeing individuals from the Orient. I have a real difficult time understanding. You know, they do their best with their English, but you know, oftentimes I just can't understand their questions. I can't understand, there's something lost in the communications. But we'll work it all out. Maybe I need to pick up the fourth language or something, you know, Chinese or Korean or whatever.
Well, I had an old colonel tell me one time that the best way to have somebody understand you is to speak loudly.
Speak loudly.
That will bridge the language gap.
What about speak loudly and carry a big stick?
That works, too.
That will work, too. Even if I have it and I'm 5,000 miles away, just as long as I have it in my hand.
Yeah. Well, there's also another way they can talk with us that I haven't mentioned before. When they go to my show page and they click to have, when it says episode on air and you click the Ken Hudnall Show, that actually take you to a page where they can click to talk. If they have a headphone and a microphone attached to their computer, they can actually talk to us that way.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there's all kinds of capabilities this system has.
Right. You know, there's another thing I wanted to mention also. I don't know if we have the hookup for it, but, you know, I also do handwriting analysis, and I don't know if you have a... you know, fax capabilities or...
Well, I have a fax sitting here.
Okay.
We're out of time, Robert.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate you spending time with us, and we'll have you back next Thursday night.
All right, I appreciate it, Ken.
Appreciate
you
it. Bye-bye.
You have a good evening. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, until tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying, have a truly... great evening.